accession number 4296, reel number 1.
Mrs. Vyshovsky, tape 1. Mrs. Vyshovsky, could you please tell me when and where you were born and something of your family background?
Well, I was born the eldest daughter of Albert Vyshovsky and Ida Vyshovsky, née Salomonsohn. My father, at the time of his marriage, was 50 years old. He had never been married before. He was, to a certain extent, a self-made man. Although he had a good family background, he did not well at school. But by the age of 20, he became secretary to one of the big Silesian industrialists. Every time I read Le Rouge et Le Noir, I'm thinking of him. It must have been something similar. I know very little about him because he was so much older. But I know that he spent 10 years in Warsaw as a representative of a German ore importing firm. And it must have been 97 or 98 when he took up the job of managing director of the shipping part of one of the largest German ore and coal trading firms. And the firm owned tugs and barges for the transport of the Upper Silesian coal along the River Oder and imported ore from Sweden. He conceived the idea of building a repair shipyard for his tugs and barges. This was roughly about the same time that he got married. And so the shipyard grew more or less at the same time as I was conceived and born.
Did you have any brothers and sisters?
I have one younger sister and two younger brothers.
Did you come from a Jewish family?
Both my parents are of Jewish extraction. None of them was religious in a Jewish way. We were brought up completely. We were baptized. When I was 5, the whole family was baptized. Not the whole family, the children were baptized. The parents did not have them baptized because they didn't want to create the impression that they had done it for worldly reasons. But they thought they wanted to give their children the benefit of an easy upbringing. They were both Christian by faith, inner faith. They were very, very friendly with the pastor who baptized us.
So you would have had a Protestant upbringing?
We had an absolutely Protestant upbringing. Our cousins, we lived in Breslau. My mother came from Berlin and my father from Upper Silesia. My cousins were not baptized and they attended Jewish religious teaching, which was, however, very, very liberal and not in the least Orthodox, for instance. They celebrated Christmas and Easter just the same as we did.
So you would have had contacts with the Jewish
faith? Oh yes, but yes. Not with any Orthodox Jews, except that later on I had a very great friend who came from an Orthodox family. And so I learned a little bit about that, but very, very little. I'm afraid I can say that my father was a bit anti-Semitic. We got in Breslau a lot of influx of very poor Polish Jews who were, well, Polish Jewry at that time was in a very uncivilized state, although in the villages the Jews were usually the most civilized people, but compared with the German Jews, they were very uncivilized, dirty, no manners, no, well, it's very difficult. I don't think you can imagine it, even if you look at your East End Jews. They were already a cut above that period. And my father was not a tolerant man, so he didn't like that. And he, from that point of view, I think he was a little bit of an anti-Semite.
Could you tell me something about your education, please?
Well, at the age of 5, my father took me to visit his shipyard. And I witnessed there the compressed air riveting of ship's boilers, which was at that time quite a new process. I was so impressed by it that I decided there and then that I would become an engineer. I must say I was never discouraged by my father or my mother. Obviously, at first they smiled, but even later on when it was obvious that I was serious about it, they never discouraged me. So I took my university entrance exam in 1919, just after the end of the First World War. And of course, I didn't want to stay at home. So I went to Darmstadt, to the Technical University, and I studied there. I also met my husband there, and we got married. And I very nearly finished my studies there, but I had to interrupt through illness. And it was some years before I was able to take it up again, by which time I had a little girl. And in those days, it was almost impossible to get living accommodation. My husband changed his job and went to Stettin, and we were without a flat. So I went back to my parents. My mother took charge of my little girl, and I took that opportunity and finished my studies at the Technische Hochschule in Breslau in 1928. It had taken me a very long time.
Was it very unusual in Germany of those days to be a woman engineer?
It was exceedingly unusual. I was always the only one. In Darmstadt, the only one amongst 3,000 students. There were a few chemistry students and one or two architect students in Darmstadt, but I had no connections with them. In Breslau, which was, after all, nearly 10 years later, I believe there was one other girl, but she was in the beginner's class. I had no contact with her. I didn't meet her. The most difficult part was the practical training, which is required. You have to have 1 year's practical training before you can take your final exams. And at first I had great difficulty in finding a training place, in spite of my father's good industrial connections. But eventually I managed to find a training place, and I worked for 6 months in a very small workshop. This is a lovely period. I loved it. But it's a long story. And the two other periods of 3 months, one usually uses once the big vacations. 3 months I worked in the shipyard, which had been my father's creation, but which he had, of the direction of which he had relinquished because it was getting too much. And 3 months I worked with Siemens Schuckert in a very large electrical firm. I had studied electrotechnic, and my degree was an electrical engineering degree.
Did you have any other children besides your one little girl?
Yes, I had another little girl.
I see.
Later on, after I had finished my... I had altogether have two daughters.
Were you at all political in those days? Did you belong to any political organizations?
Not in those days. I was never a member of the Social Democratic Party. Why not? Well, of course, I was during the so-called revolution, 1918-19, I was very much emotionally involved, but never practically involved. Later at the Technical University, I came in contact with a movement which is called Freiland, Freigeld, Festwährung, and it is something similar to the social credit movement in Canada of Major Douglas. And they were very much against the social democrats, the Marxist theories, so I never became a member of the Socialist Party. Of course, later on in the 30s, I was lucky enough to find contact with an anti-Nazi group, which I joined.
Yes, I was going to ask you, when you first became aware of anti-Semitism, and did this affect you personally as a Protestant, although your background, of course, was Jewish?
I was very lucky in that respect. At school, I never encountered any anti-Semitism. And later on, I did encounter it occasionally. I found that one or the other of my colleagues or fellow undergraduates made an anti-Semitic remark, whereupon I reacted very fiercely. And as a rule, I just then got an apology, and we usually became good friends after that.
Did you consider yourself a Jew?
No.
But it obviously meant something to you, in as much that you reacted.
Well, I was completely unreligious. I later on left the church. My husband was a Catholic. We both left our respective churches. We never baptized our children. And religion didn't mean anything to me. My Jewish descent, yes, I wouldn't say that I was proud of it, because I don't think, and I didn't think at the time, that one can be proud of something which is fortuitous, to which one hasn't contributed in any way. But I certainly was not ashamed of it, and I did consider any racial descent as irrelevant. But on the other hand, I wasn't going to stand for any insulting remarks or anything like this. And I didn't want people to be under a false impression as regards me. If people were anti-Semitic, I didn't want anything to do with them. And I didn't want them to carry on traffic with me without knowing that I was what they disliked.
Were you involved in any political activity against the Nazis?
Yes, I was lucky enough to get in contact with an anti-Nazi group who were conscious and knowledgeable about all the implications of Nazism. I had encountered National Socialists already many, many years before at university in the 20s, in the early 20s, when the Hitler did all his putsching. And we had discussions there, but we didn't take it very seriously. And it was eventually the economic situation in Germany which enabled Hitler to get a mass following. Well, this is all very well known. The group to which I eventually belonged was in a way different. It had a leader who had great insight not only in the economic but also into the political implications of Nazism. And we were trained very thoroughly. I think it is known under the name of Neubeginnen. You may have heard of it. It's called this because of the publication, a manifesto, if you like, by our leader under the name of Mieles, which in which he set out all the knowledge which was based on Marxism. But I think if one mentions the word Marxism nowadays, one has to qualify it. It's not what is called Marxism by the Bolsheviks nowadays. I can't give a political lecture here, but Marxism meant something quite different in those days, and socialism meant something quite different. And if I talk about these concepts, I mean them in the sense of those days, not what they are today. And this manifesto was brought out already illegally by the social democratic group who had fled to Czechoslovakia. And it was translated, I don't know into how many languages, and appeared in this country also.
What date would this be? Can you remember?
That must have been about 31, 32, something like that. Possibly a bit later. Neubeginnen came out, I think it must have been 32 or 33, something like that. My memory for dates is deplorable. I couldn't even tell you now when the Reichstag's fire was. I think it was 32.
At the beginning of the 30s,
yes,
but, you know, it's
anyway.
Fine. Oh, yes.
And, this was an entirely conspiratorial organization, and I came across it through my husband, who was also equally not a Nazi, an anti-Nazi. I hesitate to call ourselves socialists because we were not, although we were members of this, by that time, of the Social Democratic Party, we were not conventional socialists. This group worked till about 35, and then it was evident to the leadership that it was not possible for us to overthrow the Nazis. And we decided that the only thing to do was to leave Germany.
Were you well known to the Nazis personally?
No, not at all. Not at all. No.
What form did your activity take against the Nazis?
Well, in the early years, we tried to reconcile the Socialist Party and the Communist Party to unify the working class against the Nazis by forming little groups and giving lectures. I never lectures, I can't, I'm impossible. I was more or less doing organizational and administrative work. All had to be done very conspiratorial and no names, etc., etc. And
did you have any successes?
We had limited successes, it was becoming increasingly obvious that a small group, although we always had the example of the Bolsheviks, who were a small group and managed to overthrow, but it was a completely different situation, and as soon as that became apparent, the leadership thought it would be better. Also, the dangers were becoming greater, and there was no proportion between the proportion became so bad between the danger and the possible success that it was decided to take the leadership outside. Also, there were incidents. I mean, I had to leave rather suddenly.
Yes, why did you have to leave?
Well, we were, as it so happened, a friend of mine and I were transporting part of a forbidden library, socialist books mainly, to some safe place, and we were somehow caught. And whilst we were not imprisoned, there was a danger of being, at the time, I mean, we were only questioned by the Gestapo, and I was advised to leave.
And where did you go?
I went to Prague. This was the simplest and almost the only thing to do. I took a return ticket, and there was absolutely no difficulty.
Did you?
This was very early in 35, and it wasn't a very serious thing I had done, because I hadn't found anything. But they came later and searched my flat. My mother was there, taking charge of my children. I may mention, perhaps, that I had divorced my husband in 1933. The divorce was under the pretext that he was not a Jew and I was Jewish, so it went through without any, divorce went through without any difficulties. And in a way, I was lucky that the judge who divorced us was not a Nazi, and therefore my husband was declared the guilty party. If it had been a Nazi, it would have been the other way around, obviously. It had some implications a bit later as regards the children.
But when you went to Czechoslovakia, you went alone and
I
left your
alone.
Two daughters with your mother.
My children were left with my mother, and my sister lived also in Berlin, and they both looked after the children. But my mother moved into my flat and took complete charge, and from that moment on I have always tried to get the children out of Germany, of course, because my mother didn't realize the seriousness of the situation. She thought it was just a passing phase and I would be able to come back. And I was quite sure and quite convinced that that was an impossibility and that it was for good.
How long were you in Czechoslovakia?
Approximately a year, not quite a year.
And did you find work there?
No. I didn't know the language. I found it very difficult to learn the language. There was absolutely no, I don't know, one could possibly have gone to classes, but I didn't know anything. We were quite a group of this political group there, and we studied the conditions in Czechoslovakia as best we could, and tried to find work, but it was almost impossible. Prague was full of refugees. and some of them had good connections and managed to get work. Some of my friends did. And but it was obvious, even then, that it was only a question of time until the Nazis would take over Czechoslovakia, and it was the endeavor to get away from it. And I was very lucky. A friend of mine who had gone to Paris, where there was a functioning refugee organization, one day notified us that a domestic servant was required in England. And there were a few other women. We decided that I was the most suitable for this because at least I had some experience of household. And so I went to, came to England.
Did you speak English then?
Terrible. Absolutely terrible. I had learned to speak. Not to speak. I had learned English at school for 6 years. I had taken private lessons in Berlin, and I was incapable of speaking English. I couldn't understand and I couldn't speak. I don't know why I'm so stupid, because all my friends who had gone through the same 6 years at school were able at least to speak it a little bit. I was quite impossible. Now, I came to this country as a domestic servant to a farm in Sussex, where the man was a German refugee who had an English wife, and therefore they had some English money and where had been able to buy that farm. It was a dairy farm. And unfortunately, the wife spoke German fluently, and so I didn't learn much there. The only things I learned were from their five-year-old little daughter. That's very interesting. She had, of course, been born in Germany and brought up in German, and they told me that when they came to England, she completely refused to speak at all for about 6 months, and then she started speaking English and wouldn't speak a word of German anymore.
What was the name of the village?
Berwischwild.
Berwischwild, in Sussex.
In Sussex, yes. Ticehurst was a railway station, I now remember.